Accession number 21109, Reel 5.
Len Harkin, Reel 5. So you'd arrived in Normandy about the 15th, 16th, 17th of June. And so you went into... were you camouflaged when you arrived, or did you have to camouflage your tanks at all straight away, or...?
No, they were camouflaged.
They were camouflaged in England?
Yeah, the only time we had to camouflage them was the Ardennes.
Right, okay. And so you went first, you were telling me, to this field where the plane went over and shot at you.
Yes.
Yeah.
We lingered there for quite a few days.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were held in the line in case the Jerrys, because it was the 26th of June before we went into action.
Right. So you stayed more or less where you were,
yes,
until then?
I think we were held there in case Jerry's made a push to be able to stop a gap.
Right. So what were you doing all the time? Getting dug in, I suppose, and getting...
No, we didn't. There was a spotter plane in the next field, which was on a bit of a bank. And Oliver and I slept under that spotter plane, and he felt a movement under there, and it was a mole, and he said it was the underground movement.
Why did you sleep under the spotter plane?
I don't know. It was the tank pit was only through the hedge, but then the spotter plane was right on the other side of the field.
Right. What was the weather like?
Good. Good.
So you were sleeping out. How were you managing for food and everything?
Oh, 14-man packs, which were great.
Mm.
Lovely food. I think the army got good food, but the cooks, biggest part of the cooks, spoilt it.
So were you kept informed as to what was going on during this time, or were you just sitting waiting?
Yeah, not really. I think we were ready to move at 10 minutes' notice. But we hadn't seen action 26th of June before we saw action.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was probably at somewhere called Cully, I think I'm right in saying.
Cully, I think you could be right.
Yeah, that's what they think.
Yeah.
So.
I remember washing in a stream. I remember a house, now you mention it. A house, and I went back to look for Cully and couldn't find it. I didn't have a lot of time, but I remember her house very rough and ready. We washed in, there was a stream the other side of the house, the other side of the road, but everything, the chickens, everything was in the house. Very basic, I mean, very... Yeah.
Did you see anything of the French people who lived around there?
I think it was about the only people we saw was living in that house there. Some of the boys used to go off and get butter.
Right. So could you hear activity?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So did you know what was going on? I mean, were the German tanks in the area, or...?
Yes, but I would say at that time at Cully, to where we went into action, which was 26th of June, was roughly 2 miles away.
Was there German shell fire coming anywhere near you? Or?
No, not within... I never remember anything landing anywhere near us
while
we were at Cully, no.
Yeah. Was there any air activity?
Yes, occasionally, but very little, nothing to... the only ones, that's where I told you it came over when we were undoing the waterproofing off the back of the tank.
So this time at Cully came to an end then, fairly... What were you were given orders to move, were you?
Yes, we moved out one morning and we moved... To the just before the Carn Bayer Road, just to the north of it. Mm-hmm. And then a little place called Shur. We went in, and I remember our tank commander, which was Jock Simpson, saying there was, must have been 600-700 tanks in this valley to the north of the Carn Bayer Road. And I remember Jock Simpson saying, out of all these tanks, why do it have to be us to go up first?
So you knew you were being sent in first?
Yeah.
Did you know what you were where you were going? Did they brief you on what was actually happening? Or?
No, not really. Tank commander must have been briefed, but I knew we were going into action, that's about all.
Mm. Mm. So you were in A Squadron, weren't you?
A Squadron, 3 Troop, yeah.
Right. So what happened? You were told to...
I remember going up this sunken road. Well, we were going to the left of the sunken road, and then we had to cross this sunken road because we were going in to a place to the right. I forget the name of the little place, but it was to the right of Shur. Mm-hmm. And not very far to the right of Shur.
What was the terrain like? What sort of...
Well, it was flat. As we got on the top after this sunken road, after we crossed the sunken road, it was, you could see 2.5-3 miles, clear. Mm. Barring a wood, which was to the right of Shur on our left, which I thought was wood, but it was since I've been back, it was a very high row of trees, very thickly populated.
Yeah. What could you hear as you went forward? Could you hear any shell fire?
No, we saw a tank was... It was actually in the exact places where we got knocked out. We saw this tank, and we thought it was abandoned.
It was a German tank, wasn't it?
Yes, but it soon let us know it wasn't abandoned. So we reversed back then, and instead of going up across open country, we cut in near Shur and followed this high row of trees, which I thought was a wood, right the way along. Until we got within, I would say, well, much about the same spot as where this, and that was a mile and a half away, I expect.
So who was in your tank with you? Can you just run through the personnel?
Jock Simpson, tank commander. Tom Parsons, Hardwick, Oliver, and myself.
Right, okay. So what was the atmosphere like in the tank? I mean, was it very tense?
No. No, it was, I remember an incident where Huey Howells, they wanted to put his, coming over the air, they wanted to put the primer stove behind his escape hatch and he wouldn't have it, and the language was a bit rife until the colonel told him to get off the A set. And
so, what happened then?
So we carried along to the right of Shur. We carried on we'd gone half ways, I reckon, 3/4 mile. And then we come on to the edge of this wood. Oh, row of high trees. It looked like a wood. But when you were travelling alongside it, it looked very much like a... quite a big wood, because they were very tall trees, but since in recent years I've been back, it was only a row of very high trees, very big trees. And at the end of that, there was a double hedgerow, or it looked like thorn to me. And when we got knocked out near enough, we reversed. Oliver was driving at that time.
Why was he driving and not you?
Well, we were two first drivers again now. And you find that they had two first drivers on any tank that was leading, or near enough. And I can remember I can remember Oliver saying to me, we had Archie Limson as a tank commander, and just before we went across, Jock Simpson was made up, and Oliver said to me, he said, I don't think Jock, I'd be much happier if Archie Limson was there. But I didn't know enough about Jock Simpson. Oliver was with the first before me, and I didn't know too much about Jock Simpson. But I can remember, I didn't hear Jock speak. The first one I heard speak was Tom Parsons saying, reverse, Paddy, there's too many for us. The tank rocked. We reversed the length of the track. They'd hit us in the track. The track came off and we were stationary. Then we were hit again and flames straight away. I got out. The gun was over Oliver's hatch. I got out and it was very warm in there then, hot. I got burnt on the ankle. I was wounded. I didn't know anything about that. I felt my ankle was really hot because when I got out from here to the corner of that room there was a German. He'd been hit in the head. He had his helmet on, a pistol, because he was bleeding. I could remember him wiping the blood from his face, cocking the pistol. I was full of smoke. I put my hands up. The next thing I heard was, Taff, help me. And that was Tom Parsons. He was out with one leg right off and the other one hanging off. So that must have happened outside the tank. He was machine gunned. Because his one leg, when I lift him up to pull him to the back of the tank, the one leg was left and the other one was hanging. And I didn't realise that for a long time after. But there was no sign of any of the Hardwick or Jock Simpson. I pulled Tom Parsons a matter of a few yards and I heard my hatch go again. And yet I hadn't closed the hatch behind me. But I don't know what it was that made me look up and there was Oliver in my hatch like a ghost. He'd put his hands up there and the skin had come away in his face and it was hanging down here. His eyes were two slits. He had no hair. His face was blown up. Where he was hanging there, I pulled him out. We both fell to the floor. His trousers on the bottom was on fire. I rolled over him, put him out, got up. He ran to the back of the tank, and how he could see, I don't know, but he must have been able to see a bit. It looked like if a tank had gone German. You know, it happened so quick. And I fancy I saw a tank coming through at the back of us, a German tank. And I can't swear to it. But somebody'd machine gunned Tom Parsons, whether it was the tank or infantry, I don't know. It had made a gap in the hedge where Oliver was sat down. He was sat in position, double hedge row it was, but the tank had gone through and flattened it. And he was sat in there. I'd carried Tom within halfway to the back of the tank. And I seen the bushes move right tight behind the tank, which was in the same hedgerow as Oliver was sitting. And I thought it was our tank commander in Hardwick in there. And I said, you in there, Jock? And the next thing was, I could see the tunic, the iron hand and the jerry tunic. And a little blast grenade came out and landed there. And the blast supposed to kill him. Never touched me.
It went off,
didn't it? Yes, it went off. I remember the explosion. But the blast supposed to kill you and you couldn't be nearer. It was there. No further.
3 feet away, yeah.
Yeah. I went back to Tom. And then Oliver said, you can't do nothing for him. Get in here. And we got in there, and they went forward.
Sorry, you got in what?
In the trench where Oliver was sat, in the double hedgerow. Crawled through, there was a lovely place to get, crawl up between. It had been flattened where a tank had been through, but whether it came behind me or what, I don't know. I have a dim recollection of seeing a tank coming through. We crawled up this for about 20 yards. And I was in front. He was lying with his head in between my legs. And I could hear Tom still shouting help. And then I could hear some Germans round him. And the next thing I knew what they'd done. They'd been it to Tom. All I heard was, "Oh." And that was it. But that was about 7, 8 o'clock on the 26th of June.
Yeah. So.
And there we lay. We lay there till the following Wednesday when the 49th picked us up. He was delirious, Oliver was. And the next morning.
You couldn't move. Were there Germans?
Oh, Germans all around us, yes. In fact, I could put my hand and an Alsatian dog with them. And I could put my hand to that. Well, they searched for us 20 minutes after we were lying where we were. 20 minutes, they came searching for us and went right over the top of us. And I was waiting for a shot in the back. They passed us, they didn't find us.
So you
that was on our right hand.
Where you were.
Yeah. Well, that night, now, with the little gas mask we had, it was a little squarish one, right, easier to get in and out the tanks, you know, it was the same as the tin hats. We had a thing to put it round your neck and let this hang, you know, to fasten on the end of the gas mask. I had one in my pocket, so what I was going to do was tie to my ankle because Oliver couldn't see now. Right, we knew which way we'd come. And he was tying it to my ankle and to his wrist so he could follow me to crawl because it was a cornfield. It was actually, it wasn't corn where we were, but within a few yards it was a cornfield.
Right. So, just get this absolutely clear then. So you were in this ditch between the double hedge.
Yes.
So you lay there from the Monday morning.
Till the Wednesday.
Till the Wednesday.
Wednesday evening.
Wednesday evening. What made you decide to move?
We didn't move.
You didn't, you stayed there?
No.
Right.
Well, before this, the first night we were going to make a move, going to crawl through, and I tied the corner of my ankle and going to tie it around his wrists, and then we heard some Germans come, and they had an Alsatian dog, and I could have, they were no further than that through, and they were stopped right where we were. Now, they searched for us down that side of the hedge, but they'd come this side right behind our tank, now. And they were there and they were talking. And they had an Alsatian dog with them. And they still didn't spot us. That's what stopped us. Otherwise, we were getting ready to crawl back. Well, there was a gun then in the field just in front of our tank through a gateway, which we couldn't actually see because this hedge, double hedgerow we were in, was quite high. It was 10, 15 foot high, so a driver couldn't see it. I think the Tudder crew could see through the top of it, because he was pretty thick foliage on it, you know.
This was a German gun ahead.
Yeah,
yes.
There were two of them. We found that out when the 49th came up. They were the ones, we heard, you could tell a V8 Bren gun carrier anywhere, and we could hear these come in. And I got up in the hedge, and Oliver said to me, "Man, you'd been delirious before." He said, "Let's crawl into that house over there. There was no house near." And I said, "You need attention." And the exact words he said to me, he said, "Well, I ain't bloody giving myself up." I said, "We're not talking about giving yourself up. But I said, you need attention." I heard these Or we were shelled and typhooned. I lay in that ditch. I don't know whether whatever it was, but I guess you felt a thud. And the steam came out of it. Like, I don't know, a shot shrapnel had gone in there.
Out of the ground?
In the ditch, just to the rear of us, it was really. But from here to the end of the table, what, 2 yards, 3 yards away. You heard the thump and the smoke come out after, whether it was shrapnel or whatever. But, of course, they were no doubt after these guns that was firing. Now, I remember Tom Parsons saying reverse is too many for us. But only two I saw, and it was two guns. And I couldn't remember because they were in pieces when I saw them. They'd been, I don't know, typhooned or what. But there was the dog, the Alsatian dog was tied to one of them, but he was dead, of course.
Right. So they were typhooned while you were in the ditch?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So when the Brennan's carriers passed us, I said, Oliver, I said, they're Brennan carriers. But I said, whether Jerry's captured them? I said, oh, what, I don't know, so we better hang on. I said, if they're our boys, I said, there'll be infantry coming up behind. Well, now, the boys in the Brennan carriers, they'd gone on through the gateway to where the guns were knocked out. Now, they come back down the same hedge, right? They come down exactly the same place as where the Germans had first searched for us in the beginning. And I looked up, and I could see the difference. It wasn't the German bluish uniform, like, it was the khaki. Well, I could, the old gator first. And although it was pretty thick, in the butt, you know, the stem of that, if you looked up through there, there was more foliage from there on, right? But if you looked up from there, uh-huh, you could see the old polar bear on here, the 49th. And I said, for Christ's sake, don't shoot. I said, I'm British. And then with that, I was looking at the barrel of about four rifles. And they said, you all right? And they had to hack the hedge away, cut it away, to get me out. And they said, how are you? All right. I said, yeah, I'm fine. They stood me up and down I went, walloping the floor. And I said, my mate, he's rough. And they got him out. And they were helping him back then. We had to go back. And the officer of the was back at the Brennan carrier, further on now, actually. They'd passed where we were. And the officer was like this, because he thought we were German prisoners. And he was rubbing his hands. And they said, hey, they're our boys. He said, don't let your mate see himself. He said, the shock could kill him. I said, I don't think he can see. And with that, they whipped us off down to a first aid dressing centre, first of all. Now, we passed on the way. I didn't know what had happened to the rest of them. But on this long wood, on the way up, when we were going, you noted that there was a recess. You know, the wood was all the way along here. Then it got thinner and there was a recess in there. And then this double hedgerow went where we lay.
Right.
Jim Scott was just on that recess. And I could see Jim lying on the back of the tank, black. His hands like that, and yet one part of his cellular pants was as white as like if it had just been washed. And the rest of him was, and I mean black.
He had his hands crossed in front of
like
him.
Like that, like if he'd been, well, they reckon he'd been machine gun on the back of the tank, and the bed in the tank had caught fire, and the bed in, and that's what Jim was laying on.
Yeah.
But then that, it was a three-corner piece. I could see it exactly as it, yeah, as if it was yesterday.
Yeah. So that was the end of your tank then? That was where it rested?
Oh, yes. Well, we were the tank further up.
Yeah.
That was Jim Scott, so it was the next one back. Now, I didn't know what had happened after, because we branched off then, where we'd come up that way at the edge of the wood.
Mm.
We got to Jim Scott's tank, and we branched down now onto the Bayeux Road, right? Cairn Bayeux Road. And we went to a first aid dressing first place first.
Right.
And I'll tell you what happened there now. There was a news reel camera, and a funny thing, my next to the farm at the Glebelands was a person by the name of Lily Coles, and she came back from the films that night. I remember the news camera there. They were put in Oliver. Now, the orders had come through, unless he was pretty seriously wounded, you didn't go back to England. Because there were so many prisoners there to get off the beaches that they could be overrun with prisoners. Unless you were seriously wounded, you didn't go back. I seen Oliver off into the ambulance that took him back to the beach, I expect. And then I could see the cameras there. I then went into a big marquee, put on a bench, waiting to be seen to. And a British paratrooper came in, and there was a German in there that had been shot in the backside, and they were pretending to him. And of course, he had his trousers down, and as this paratrooper came in, he took a flying leap and he belted this German and sent this German flying. And he didn't know what was wrong with this paratrooper. The shot had gone through there.
Through the back of his neck.
And out through there, and never even chipped a tooth.
And out through his mouth.
Yeah, and they reckon it was a miracle that he was living, because his spinal cord is hit.
Yeah.
By that much.
Extraordinary.
Spitting blood, and that's all. Yeah.
Amazing. Let me just take you back just for a moment to, I mean, the 2 days you spent in the ditch. I mean, what state were you in? I mean, you must have been getting increasingly thirsty first, I suppose.
No, there was a churn. The old-fashioned churns used to have a dip in them.
Milk.
Yes, even the British had this, because they used to bowl the old. They didn't used to be 10 gallons. They used to be 12 and 15, I think, years ago. And they used to have a dish in the middle with to put your hand on to bowl your churn. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a churn there, and an Oliver now. All I had was a first aid dressing, you know, and they all decided, wouldn't they? And another thing I've got to tell you on this too. Now, I can't remember. I remember putting my hand up to see if there was anything in the churn, and there wasn't. It was empty. But while we lay there that night, it tipped down with rain, and the top of this churn was full of water. So when I put my hand up, right, I think I caught the handle first of all, and I seen water there. So what I did was got my first aid dressing, and you'd be careful because there were still Germans about, look, right? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a bit later now. And I put my first aid dressing up on the top of the churn, soaked it, and put it back to dampen his lips. Mm-hmm. Right?
Survive. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't put any on. I wasn't thirsty. Mm. I was more worried about getting out alive.
Yeah. But Oliver cope with his, I mean, he was drifting out of consciousness.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his wounds, I mean, he must have been very red raw at first, but did they dry off over the...
Oh, yes. Flaky. It had gone... The skin, it was hanging down where he'd put his hands up and it would come away. Yeah. And it was hanging down, and I tucked it inside his shirt, his tunic. Yeah. There.
Okay. Len Harkins, end of reel 5.